Barrett Jones joins us now, the former Alabama great, now with ESPN Radio. He'll be at that Big 12 championship game, 11 o'clock ABC kick. He'll have it on ESPN Radio. Oklahoma State at Baylor. He's on the Pepsi Hotline and presented each week by our friends at Gus's World Famous Fried Chicken. What's up, Barrett? How are you?
How are we doing, guys?
Doing awesome. Doing awesome.
Anything happened this week that y'all, you know, got to talk about? I mean, not much news.
Rich Rodriguez took the Jacksonville State job.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I mean, a new Peanuts Christmas special.
I love how you constantly try to work Jacksonville State into your feed. You're a loyal fan.
The Jacksonville State University to you, Barrett.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to disrespect this program like that.
You were involved in, you know, a drive to win an Iron Bowl at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and you saw what Bryce Young had to do Saturday night and the other 10 guys on the field with him. In a hostile environment, in a game with that kind of pressure on it, can you explain to us in layman terms how hard it is to pull something like that off?
That was unbelievable. I mean, it was so quick story. I was actually calling the game. I had LSU A&M. And so, you know, like the game ended that last drive started like right during the first quarter, like as my game was starting. So there was a TV in the booth next to me, and I'm over there calling the game the whole time, like between plays, just over here watching Bryce Young trying to be focused in both worlds. It was very stressful. My pits were sweating. A lot going on, but it was unbelievable. I think the improbability of it to me was not just that it was a 98-yard drive, not just by the way that there should have never been that much time on the clock because Auburn should have never run out of bounds, but also just because of what had happened earlier in the game. I mean, there was nothing that had happened previously that made you think a 98-yard drive was at all possible. And, you know, even on first and second down, it certainly didn't look good. And then finally you get that first down there on third and 10. It was amazing. It really was. It was the guys that stepped up. I mean, honestly, like, I'm like, who the heck is Brooks? I mean, he's two huge catches there, on that drive. But, I mean, you got to give Bryce Young credit. You got to give the offensive line on that drive alone a little bit of credit. I'm not going to give him much credit otherwise. But on that drive, I'm going to give him a little bit of credit. It was unbelievable that it didn't matter what had happened previously. And those moments, those guys stepped up and made plays. And, I think that drive was probably just because of the situation, because of what, you know, earlier in the game, how they couldn't move the ball for three quarters. I think that was probably an even more improbable drive than the one we pulled off in 2009.
Look, I mean, the injuries were a story, but the offensive line, which we've talked to you about, a bigger story. I mean, giving up the 7 sacks, 5 in the first half, they've been awful. I mean, 22 sacks over the last 8 games. And, look, you played the position. You played it at a high level. Doug Marrone obviously can coach. I know there's a lot of Alabama fans that are upset with him. Nick Saban can recruit. I mean, what do you chalk this up to? I mean, we're talking about going into the SEC championship game, and it seems like it's getting worse, not getting better. You're playing around, you're plugging guys in, and nothing's working to this point.
Well, it was a low point for sure in the first half. I mean, my eyes were bleeding. It was hard to watch. There was a miscommunication. I mean, the inability to run the football. There's plenty of blame to go around. I mean, I thought some of the play calling, to be honest with you, was you got to be aware that you literally can't block anyone at the right tackle position. So, like, let's not just drop back and just expect that it's going to happen. You know what I mean? And that there were a lot of times where I think we put those guys in situations where they had to block man-to-man. I say those guys because I know we had several guys over there. Eventually, if somebody tells you who they are enough times, you got to believe them. And so I thought that just continuing to go empty and not really have any help, a chip, back, whatever over there was an interesting strategy. I thought it got better as the game went. I thought Chris Owens was much better. I would be shocked if he doesn't start, the SEC championship game. But look, it's everything. It's the cohesiveness of the unit. It's not just the right tackle, by the way. There's been mistakes all over the field. Just the communication. And certainly just there are times where guys are just getting whipped, which is not something you're used to seeing, where just routinely in one-on-one guys getting dominated. So, and look, those guys from Auburn are good players, but it's not like they're Will Anderson. Or, by the way, I was thinking as I was watching that Michigan game, I was like, if Alabama plays Michigan in the college football playoff, I'm not even sure I want to watch Aiden Hutchinson and what he would against any of the right tackles for Alabama. That'd be hard to watch. So yeah, it's going to have to find a way to magically get better. I think hopefully the scheme and the play calling around it against Georgia will be better, and we'll figure out how to combat it. Cause it was horrible. I mean, let's put things in perspective. This is an offense I've criticized a lot this year, and rightfully so, I think. But I mean, statistically going into the game, they're still like one of the top five offenses in the country. You know, yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing is as bad as it's been at times, like they're still putting up some huge numbers and points. So, you know, let's zoom out a little bit. It hasn't been a complete disaster all year. There are some things that make you think that, hey, maybe possibly it could peak at the right time.
Yeah, but let's put feet on the ground. Let's be realistic. It's not good right now. And no, a lot of it is because of the offensive line. You can only do so much. So you there are things you can do to cover it up, right? To mask it. What do you do? Tell us, what do you do if you just assume that the right tackle cannot block the Georgia defense? How do you, in football terms, you know, scheme up and help protect the quarterback in that situation? What are some things to do? One less guy in a route, a running back over there, a tight end, extra big. So tell me what you do.
Well, I will say too, I mean, look, coaches are smart. I mean, they defensive coaches are very smart in that if you do those kind of things, they can make it really difficult on you. You know, like for example, if they know there's a running back on that side that's there to chip, well, they can blitz the guy who the running back has, and then all of a sudden he's gone, you know? And so there certainly are ways to do it. You can chip. You know, the other thing that we never did during my time, I know that we did in the NFL quite a bit, was essentially, you know, you're saying, hey, if it's a four down line, which a lot of times it is, you have two D tackles and two D ends, then you're going to slide it to the right, you know, if all else is equal. And you're just going to say, hey, we're going to leave the left tackle on the island all day, and we're going to slide the center that direction so that, you know, at least the right tackle knows he's got some help on the inside. You know, should that guy make an inside move? You know, I think putting a tight end over there formationally, traditionally that makes it a little bit easier when you have a tight end there who can maybe chip on his way out, you know, into a route combination. You know, there certainly are things you can do. And then I would say probably the biggest help to any pass protection is just finding a way to run the ball. I mean, that's the thing, is that that's exacerbated the situation because the inability to run the ball, there's not a whole lot of respect for the run game right now. And so those defensive ends are just getting upfield really quickly and making it really difficult. So I think all those things you can try. And, you know, obviously you want to get as many screens and as many, you know, quick game as you can just to try to get that going. But at some point you're going to have to block those guys. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting.
Barrett Jones is with us, former Alabama great, now with ESPN Radio. He is on the Pepsi Hotline and joins us each week courtesy of Gus's World Famous Fried Chicken, 2201 Second Avenue South. Order right now and grab it for the family on the way home today, 2201 Second Avenue South in Birmingham. Online, GusFriedChicken.com. That's GusFriedChicken.com. You've been around Nick Saban a lot. You've played for him. You played for him as a very young player. For him to have Kool-Aid McKinstry on the field as much as he has right now, what does that tell you about how much he thinks this guy can help?
Yeah, I think, look, you know, Coach Saban, he does not care about how old you are, how much playing time the guy ahead of him has had. He wants to win now. That's always been his mentality. He's not afraid to play freshman. So the fact that he has him on the field, you know, means that he feels like he's improved a lot. And he thought that was on the bright side, some of the best defense that Alabama's played maybe all year. And I think he was part of that. So, yeah, I think it's a huge testament, and you know, to his confidence in him. And look, I think that the messaging to me has been interesting all year from Coach Saban. I just watching him, I think it's funny, like that rant he went on the other night. Like that, to me, that was so anti-Saban in so many ways. But continually, everything he says, it seems like he's trying to like build confidence in this team. Which, hey, I've always said he's half psychologist, half coach. So he clearly knows what the guys need and knows what they need to hear. I certainly didn't hear any of those speeches when we were there that, you know, telling everyone to kind of back off of the players. If he was telling us to pay no attention to what people were saying, you know, the opposite essentially of what he said. So, yeah, I think his messaging to me has been very interesting all year, and I think indicative of what he feels like this team needs, and that's some confidence. And, you know, the defense played with a lot more confidence, at least against Auburn.
Barrett, there's a lot of people that believe Brian Robinson will not be able to go in this matchup on Saturday. And if that's the case, one healthy scholarship running back, and that's Trey Sanders. Andy Reid is one of the best play callers in football, former offensive lineman. So let's make you an offensive coordinator in this situation. If you're going against the Georgia defense, giving up less than 7 points per game, you've got a bad offensive line, you've got Trey Sanders. I mean, how do you even call this game?
Yeah, it's a major problem. It's absolutely a huge issue, and that might be the biggest issue really going into the game. You know, let me just back up, and I'll say if I feel like I'm being doom and gloom here, I think there could be some silver linings. You know, I still have it stuck in my head, as great as George is, and as much as I've watched him play this year, you know, against other teams, the reality is, first of all, let me just say, complete respect for Georgia. They're obviously the best team in the country right now, most consistent, deserve to be number one. I don't think anyone's arguing that. But, you know, their best win this year is over Clemson, right? And they haven't really played a team that's really tested them. And in that Clemson game, which I called, it was essentially a 3-3 game, right? I mean, they had a pick six there in the second half that made it 10-3. And so I still have that image a little bit stuck in my head. And I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not sure that Georgia is quite as I think they're definitely the best team in the country. I'm just not sure they're like, you know, we've had some like all-time great teams over the past decade. Like, I think Alabama last year, 2019 LSU. Like, I'm not ready to say Georgia is like unbeatable, I guess, yet. And I, you know, going into the year, like, they're one of the big concerns for Georgia was their secondary. And if you look back at their schedule, they really haven't played a team that has challenged them in the secondary. They haven't really played an off passing offense or really a wide receiver group, anything resembling what they're going to face against Alabama. So I think there is silver lining. I think it's going to be hard to run the ball against Georgia anyway. I think they're going to have to come out and find a way to protect. Yes, you got to mix in some run game, but I think we're going to see them throw it a bunch and try to find some matchups in the secondary that are favorable. Now, the trick to all this is that you got to find a way to protect, and that's the problem. And that's been the problem for everyone, by the way, is that I can't even get to see how other their secondary really is when I watch tape, because – you know, by the time the quarterback's third foot hits the ground, one of those animals are back in the backfield, you know, just that front seven is unbelievable. They're so dominant, as as I've seen in college football in a long time. So, you know, that's a silver lining. And then I think offensively, and I'm just going off into a question you didn't even ask me here, but, you know, that's what great analysts do. I think offensively, you know, it's a pretty good matchup for Alabama, I guess defensively for Alabama, because I think what they really – have done well. And I thought there was some great interior play from the defensive linemen of Alabama in the Iron Bowl game. So I do think that it's the strength for what they do well for Alabama against the strength of what Georgia does well in running the football. So there are some silver linings of how potentially could they win it. It could be a low scoring game where the defense plays really well, stops the run of Georgia. I still don't fully believe in the playmakers that Georgia, they had some good players, but no just game wreckers. Which typically is what Alabama struggles against, kind of those really good man-to-man coverage type receivers that are hard to cover. So it could be a good matchup, low-scoring game. You get a few big plays from wide receivers. Who knows? Now, if I was a gambling man, which I'm not saying I would certainly back that up with any money. I'm just trying to paint a silver lining. You asked what the game plan was. Maybe that's the game plan. Yeah.
Well, let me recap, if you just joined us, what Barry just said. He said basically the boat is sinking. There's a fire in the engine room. There are no lifeboats. There are sharks in the water, but Alabama's pretty good swimmers. That's basically what he just said. There's a chance we can outswim the sharks. That's a good recap.
Wow. No one knows how to describe a glass half empty better than you, Jim.
Yeah. You know what? That's what good analysts do.
Hey, that's right. Barrett, you're not a gambler, but gun to head, would you play Georgia -6.5 or Bama +6.5?
I play Georgia gun to head. I still think, just based on what this team has done to all the teams, I mean, they've destroyed everyone that's been on the field. Like, I saw a stat the other day. It was, I think, no, I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. I think it was Georgia has given up 83 points this year, and the next closest team is Clemson with 180. So more than double, you know, the next opponent as far as what they've allowed. I mean, it's crazy how good this defense has been all year. It's hard for me. And I mean, there's not a whole lot that when you go back and turn on that Iron Bowl tape that gives you, you know, a ton of confidence. But hey, go turn on the Arkansas tape offensively, and then go turn on the Iron Bowl tape defensively, And maybe you can piece together some confidence. How about that?
I did want to ask you this. So LSU and USC got their guys. So did Florida and Billy Napier. Nobody's talking about Billy Napier. He was an offensive analyst when you were there. He didn't take a full-time coaching position on field until the year after you were gone. How well do you know Billy Napier, and how well of a job do you think he'll do at Florida?
First of all, LT, I compliment your research for knowing that. Impressive. I love Billy Napier. I think he's fantastic. The players always really liked him and connected with him. He always did a good job, and I always knew. Yeah, there's some analysts that come through, and you're kind of like, that guy probably will never amount to much. Somebody probably just got him this job. And those other guys were like, oh, that guy's legit. Like, he's going to be a good coach one day. And Coach Napier was always one of those guys that I always really liked. And so I think he's going to be fantastic. I think he's going to bring a lot of energy. I think he understands recruiting, which is going to be a big change from Dan Mullen, who I think had really grown tired of recruiting. I talked about that a little bit before it even happened on here, just of how I think he never liked recruiting. And it's just become more important where now you have to re-recruit every year. And so I think he'll be a good fit. You know, Brian Kelly, that was I was a little bit of a surprise to me. I didn't see that coming. But I think he'll be really successful. I think LSU is the best job of the whole bunch. You're talking about three coaches in the last 20 years who found a way to win a national championship. I think that's outstanding. I was shocked by Lincoln Riley that he went to USC. That one, I thought he was going to go to LSU. When I was there, they were telling us it was almost a done deal. You know, I've tried to make sense over that one. I always say, I tweeted this out, I don't really buy the whole narrative that Lincoln's scared of the SEC, doesn't want to compete against the SEC. My best guess is that Lincoln just said, hey, I'm 30-something years old. My wife is too. We got young kids. Let's go live in Manhattan Beach for the next 10 years instead of living in Oklahoma. So it's definitely been interesting. And unlike other cycles, other than Billy Napier, who obviously is coming from a small school to a big school, the other moves have all been, you know, somewhat lateral. So now we have these other behemoth jobs available, you know, in Oklahoma and in Notre Dame. And I have no idea how this is going to pan out. I've had no idea from the start. You know, there's Luke Fickell's a name you're still hearing a lot. And I don't know how it's going to pan out, but it's going to be wild. And then we don't have enough time to talk about all this, but the domino effect from the players to me is going to be so interesting to watch. It's just going to be open season on all these schools and guys transferring and moving around and figuring out where they want to be. And it's going to be just nuts to me. NIL deals getting lined up for Caleb Williams. I'm already hearing rumors of that. And it's the wild, wild west right now. And we're kind of, this is our first full cycle of having NIL transfer rule, you know, all lined up with these coaches leaving. And I think it's going to be a major ripple effect throughout college football.
All right, he is Barry Jones, the former Alabama great, presented each week by our friends at Gus's Fried Chicken. Don't forget GusFriedChicken.com, GusFriedChicken.com, or 2201 2nd Avenue South. Great idea for holiday parties, office parties. Just take some home for dinner tonight for the family. Barrett, enjoy the Big 12 Championship, Oklahoma State-Baylor, 11 o'clock ESPN Radio. We'll talk to you next week.
Will do, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy, thank you. Barry Jones with us on the Pepsi Hotline.